Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:46 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 8th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. For me, at least, it's been a very cold week and indeed a very dry week because my mains water froze over on Saturday morning last. So I've been drawing water from the local well, which is blessedly clean water, but is still 300 meters from our house. So I have a new appreciation for those people living in the third world who have to go walk a considerably longer distance to draw water to their homes, and at least ours is clean. Elsewhere, we see that the stock markets have sustained their upward breaks, and as I said in last night's audio, and as we repeat, at the chart seminar, it's that if markets have further to go now, then they will sustain their upward breaks. And so far, we've seen that the vast majority of markets that have been able to sustain breaks out of these 4 month ranges have been able to sustain them throughout the week, and that's broadly bullish activity. Some of the better performers have been in the emerging markets, with a number of Latin American indices breaking to the upside. Argentina, Chile have been among those. Brazil is up there at 70,000 points and pushing on its all-time highs. Elsewhere in Asia, we see that China remains in this broad consolidation and pulled back a little from the upper side of that area this week. That's at least in part due to the fact that the central bank had an auction of 3 month bills and pushed the yield up a little bit on those, suggesting that China is moving towards tightening. This has also been a little bit weaker week for the US dollar, and it has sustained the vast majority of the gain that it had from late last year. And if one were to look at the weekly chart, then you really wouldn't see very much to say that this dollar rally is over. But it was a little bit of a softer week, and this was a powerful week for a number of the commodities. Gold has rallied well from that area of support in the region of $1,100, and it finished out the week in the region of 1,140. So that's good strong action, and it does now look like we're seeing gold finding support. And if we go back and look at the way gold has performed over the last 7 or 8 years, and we have seen a number of 18-month consolidations which have been completed with emphatic upward breaks. Well, we saw that upward break in September, and we saw an acceleration up to just over $1,200, and a rather larger pullback than many of us were expecting, but it is finding support now, and it would need to take out the recent lows for this to be anything other than a little pause in the powerful advance that began back in September. We've seen on previous occasions during gold's big advances from these 18-month consolidations that it has tended to pause around New Year, and that was certainly the case this time. And if we do start to see it pushing above, if we were to see follow-through next week, that would be truly bullish activity. And if we go back and look at some of those other precious metals, such as platinum, which is up and testing the $1,600 level, it finished out the week at 1,580. And silver also has had a very good week, and it's back above $18, finished out the week at 1,850. And this is really quite bullish activity. We continue to see that these precious metals are towers of strength, and that gold remains one of the better performers in absolute terms. When we look at the rest of the commodity complex, the industrial metals also had a very firm week over the last 5 days. Copper is up there at 340 cents. Nickel is firming within its range. Zinc is back above $2,500. Tin has extended its break upwards from the 6 month range and really has hit a pocket of or a vacuum of supply above the market and is surging out of this range exactly how we would expect it to, because we would define these trading ranges as explosions waiting to happen, and that's exactly what tin is doing. It's exploding out of this range. This has also been an interesting week in government bonds. While they're finishing out the week a little bit softer, we're at a stage now where UK gilts are at 4% and pressuring the upper side of the range. The US 10-year is almost up to 4%, and that's also an area of psychological resistance. So if we can assume that governments are intent on keeping yields low for as long as possible in order to support their respective housing markets, then we are getting to an area where there is the potential for some support mechanism in buying bonds by central banks to bring down those yields. So we are at a sort of a do or die type area for some of these government bond yields. I continue to maintain that government bond yields probably bottomed back there in early 2009 or late 2008, depending on which market one is looking at, but somewhere in the region of 2% on the US 10-year. And we're unlikely to see that 2% level in the absence of a major financial crisis. And that, I think, is unlikely at this stage and would be truly a black swan at this point. But we can look at other sovereign bond markets, and the Swiss bonds have had an also had an interesting week because the price hit a new 20-year high at the end of last year, and it's now pulling back from that area. And of course, if prices are hitting new highs, yields are at new lows, and they were testing the, I think it's their all-time lows, and have rallied back from that area, and it's increasingly looking like a failed downside break. So there is less risk of the Swiss central bank getting involved at this point, rather against the risk of the Bank of England or the Fed are getting involved, or the respective treasuries, and that is making for interesting conditions in these government bonds. In soft commodities, the sugar market has had a very strong week this week. It's finishing out a little bit softer, but it has had a powerful week, and it's a little bit overextended in the very short term. So if we see a little bit of a pullback, that isn't unwarranted. But the fact that it has sustained this break upwards from the 3 month range and reasserted the bull market does suggest that we could see some further upside, provided any pullback remains orderly. Cocoa has also paused, but is also one of the better performing of the soft commodities, and does look like it can go higher, provided it sustains the progression of higher reaction lows. And the grains remain within these ranging phases. But the important thing about the grain markets is that we've seen huge advances in the last couple of years, which have been almost completely negated. But the vast majority of these soft commodities have found support at historically relative, really quite high levels. $4 corn only a few years ago would have been considered extremely expensive, whereas today it's looking more like a new plateau level. So we have entered a new pricing environment for soft commodities, and it's at significantly higher levels than consumers will have been used to over the last 20 and 30 years. And that is a departure, and that does feed through into this supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme, which has been central to the fuller money view for much of the last decade. And nothing has changed in materially to hinder that theme in the coming decade. We remain in a broad situation where emerging markets, or we have the progressing east, but we can, I think, more correctly refer to markets as progressing and regressing now, because you have emerging Asia and commodity producing Latin America, which have been untainted by the shenanigans that went on during the credit bubble. They have sounder balance sheets. They're the centers or the leaders in terms of GDP growth. They have got their governance under control. They're increasingly leading the world in various different industries and becoming competitive in areas that would once have been seen as sacrosanct for Europe and the USA. And there's an increasing competition, not only in manufacturing, but in higher end manufacturing as well. So we are seeing a little bit of a change going on. And we are also experiencing the greatest urbanization in history. The globalization has brought billions of new consumers into the global economy, and they aspire to the standards of living in the West that we take for granted. And I believe me, when your mains water freezes and your house goes dry, you really do come to realize how much we do take for granted in our part of the world. And they aspire to to that standard of living, and they're doing everything they can to get it. And that necessarily implies an increasing per capita consumption of just about everything, not only commodities. Commodities are certainly benefiting enormously from the urbanization theme, because urbanization means infrastructure development, and not just in terms of housing, but in terms of power generation, water and sewage, and everything that is needed for city living. And the big population centers of the world are building cities and improving their infrastructure at a quite incredible rate. And the aging infrastructure that we have in the West is in need of being replaced, and that is also underway. And we continue to see that the mining companies have been some of the leaders and some of the absolute performers in the last year, and remain in consistent advances, because people are increasingly looking towards the relative health of the emerging markets and increasingly coming to the conclusion that they want a piece of that too. So commodities have done extraordinarily well, but with urbanization, you also have the growing middle class theme, and that growing middle class will have a higher consumption of just about everything. So companies that have sound international branding and that have products that can be sold to the new middle class are also likely to outperform. In other words, global companies, companies that have a global remit, that generate most of their earnings from the emerging markets, are in a strong competitive position relative to those that depend almost exclusively on the US economy or the British economy or the European economy, because that's not where the growth is going to be. We're leaving recession, and that is almost assured at this point, but growth is likely to be relatively muted, and certainly it will have a great deal of trouble competing with the kind of growth rates that we're already seeing in some of these emerging markets. So that suggests that there is going to be very much a two-tier type of market out there. There are going to be companies that are setting the pace in terms of their profit growth, and that's more than likely to be generated from their exposure to the global economy rather than their domestic economies. And we're increasingly going to see that emerging markets are going to have champion companies that are moving out and making a niche for themselves in the global economy, and that's to be expected in any great bull market. And we are in a great bull market at the moment. Participation is still relatively muted. In the short term, people have probably bought into emerging markets in the last few months, and there's a degree of nervousness out there. But we have also seen that the majority of stock markets have sustained their moves above the 200-day moving averages. A good number of them have retraced the over the condition or the overbought condition that they developed following the May to August rally. And we're seeing a number of them breaking to the upside right now, and that's all good bullish activity. And provided they sustain their progressions of higher reaction lows, which has been the hallmark of the advance over the last year and counting, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. 2010 is unlikely to produce the same percentage gains that we saw last year, for the simple reason that we were coming off such a low base last year. But there is still considerable potential that this is going to turn into another impressive year for a number of stock markets. And while there are, and of course, no bull market goes up in a straight line, and we will be presented with reasonable buying opportunities during medium-term corrections where overbought conditions are unwound, and the best time to buy just about anything is following those corrections once they find support and sustain their progressions of higher reaction lows. And when we start to see those upward dynamics, then we are being presented with reasonable buying opportunities for the longer term. In the commodity complex, we continue to see that there is strength right across the boards, and that's not only due to the fact that we're seeing consumer demand pick up in the emerging markets. There's also a lot of investment demand in there, and we're increasingly seeing that there are ETFs which allow us exposure to just about everything. I posted during the week an interesting article about ETNs, and it does help to raise the point that one does really need to read the prospectus for ETFs before purchasing, or in other words, to do one's due diligence in order to ensure that you have an idea of exactly what it is one is buying. And that is true of just about anything. Over the there is also the developing theme, just like we have a two-speed economy, a global economy out there. There seems to be a bit of a two-speed or a dichotomy in the performance of currencies, because this week we saw that the dollar was a little bit weaker for the end of the week, but it was firmer against the euro and the pound for a good part of the week. And on those same days when it was stronger against the pound and the euro and the yen, it was weaker against some of the emerging market currencies. And that is, I think, indicative of the type of market that we have right now, because we're seeing that currencies such as the Indian rupee or the Taiwan dollar or the Korean won or the Brazilian real or possibly even the Argentine peso, but certainly the Chilean peso and the Colombian peso and the Mexican peso. These are all currencies that are strengthening against the US dollar. And that's not a flash in the pan. That's not a short-term move. That this does appear to be something that could have legs. We also saw that the Asian dollar index broke upwards this week, which suggests that those Asian currencies are continuing to appreciate against the dollar. They are retracing that big decline they had against the US dollar during that panicky period following the Lehman bankruptcy. And they're getting back to that position of relative strength against the US dollar. That is suggestive not only of their considerable relative economic performance or their stock market performance, but it's also, I think, an indication of the amount of money that is beginning to move into those Asian emerging markets or Asian markets generally, ex-Japan. Japan also had an interesting week this week, actually. It finished the week up in the region of 10,800 on the Nikkei, and the banks, which have been really quite stoutly refused to rally over the last couple of months, have firmed in the latter part of the week. We've seen a number of upward dynamics which have not been followed through, but it does suggest that we're getting a little bit of bullish trampolining at the lower side of the range down here for the TOPIX bank sector, and it is testing its 2003 lows, so those banks really are weak down here. But the Nikkei is rallying in here. The second section small caps are rallying, and the banks do appear now to be showing some signs of life. And the yen is weakening just against just about every currency. I think some of the more interesting currency pairs for the yen are against the Korean won, and the won is strengthening in here, not only against the US dollar but also against the yen, and that will certainly take some of the pressure off the Japanese exporters, but also the yen against the South African rand. The South African rand has been one of the stronger currencies out there, and it continues to strengthen, and with a yield of 7%, it's alluring for carry traders. And it broke upwards against the yen this week, but also against the euro. So we continue to see that you have emerging markets which have this strength relative to some of the developed markets. And while we see that the dollar rallied somewhat in the last month of last year to break the short-term downtrend against the euro, and has been a little bit firmer against the pound, and has certainly been a bit more firm against the Japanese yen, it's giving up quite a lot of its ground against some of those emerging market currencies. So when one is making a decision about the strength of an individual one of those quasi-reserve currencies, it does do well to contrast them against some of those emerging market currencies, because there really is a stark difference between the performance of the yen, the euro, the pound, the Swiss franc, and the dollar against each other versus how they're doing against some of those emerging markets and commodity-related currencies, because of course the Australian dollar, New Zealand dollar, Canadian dollar have all been appreciating against those other developed market or the quasi-reserve currencies over the last few weeks, particularly. When we look at the long term, because you have the relative strength and leadership in those emerging markets, and you have the continued strength of the respective currencies, and the fact that governance has improved so remarkably in the last decade. And of course, we have to be aware that the people in charge in some of these better performing emerging markets are, to an extent, painting by numbers. They've seen what works and what doesn't work. They're taking the best of the governance methods that have worked for other successful economies, and they're applying them to their own situations. So the speed with which an economy can move up the rankings is, in terms of development, is really getting faster all the time, because people are increasingly coming to the conclusion that capitalism does work, provided you have the governance to back it up. So you do need the rule of law, you do need property rights, you do need to have a respect for the well, you do have to have an aim to get as much pe many people into employment as possible, and to open up to the global economy and get out there and compete. And certainly that has worked for a large number of these emerging markets, and continues to work. With the commodity complex, we continue to see that this is a secular bull market. This is a secular bull market for emerging markets, and it's a secular bull market for commodities. And there would have been a lot of the bears would have written off those industrial metals last year, but they have rallied impressively. And we have copper back here at almost $3.50. And the highs are up there around $4, so we're really not very far away from the highs for copper. And when we were down at the lows, which were down around $2 not so long ago, there were people writing off the commodity bull market entirely. But I think that is to misunderstand the demand that comes in from the rising per capita consumption of commodities due to the urbanization theme, where we have 3 billion new consumers in the global economy. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.